You are listening to Journeys on Revolution Radio on freedomslips.com and simulcast with wolfspiritradio.com. Join JP, your tour guide today, on this journey of discovery from the known to the unknown in search of enlightenment, knowledge, and truth. Good afternoon, good evening, good morning. Welcome to Journeys with JP here on Wolf Spirit Radio, on Ever Beyond Radio, on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. All listener supported. If you wish to donate to the Revolution Fund, please go to the support page from the Freedom Slips homepage or from the revolutionradio.co. page. Now, I'm saying this right now because my show tonight is going to be partly pre-recorded. This afternoon, I had a conversation with, how can I put this? Well, his name is Adrieus. Let me say that right. I've had trouble. We talk about it at the beginning. This is a pre-record. We did it a few hours ago because he had to put his children to sleep, and he lives a normal life, and we'll probably listen to the archive of this show. He's very gently spoken. He's spoken with us a few times on Wolf Spirit Radio in the last week. Please come to the archives if you want, you know, want to find out more. This continues our conversation. And essentially we're going to take you straight there. We're going to take you straight out of our existence on Earth and our greater existence as other kind of beings, who come here and go there. His story is that he was with his lover. Wasn't his sister or his mother. It was his lover, his partner. And they were shot down in their UFO from the Pleiades in 1972. Captured by Project Pounce, taken to Area 51. Tortured, abused, eventually set free. His partner took the ship back, left him here because she wanted to protect him because she didn't think the ship would make it. She did make it. So she's back. But in the meantime, he's lived his life and grown up. Well, grown up. He looked like a child. He looked like about an 8-year-old boy. And not actually a very highly advanced being. Anyhow, so these days he's a lot taller and fits in very normally to our world. Very sensitive, a beautiful man. Please open your heart and listen to this man when I speak with him. His name, as I said, he will help me say it, is Adrieus, and this is his story. So, Audrey, first of all, I'd like you to pronounce very slowly how I pronounce your whole name. I've been trying to work it out how you pronounce all those E's, I's, and U's.
Adrieus.
Adrieus. And it's now. The thing is that I that Max says Audrey, but it's Audrey. It's
R, isn't it? Audrey.
Audrey. So that's a sort of slightly short, long A, if you're seeing.
Yeah.
Audrey. Hang on, I've lost it again.
Audrey.
Yeah, it's the second part. It's the is how it turn out, how you get to the S in the end.
Audrey. Audrey.
Audrey Ewis, right, Audrey Ewis. Okay, so, is that right? Audrey Ewis.
Yes.
Excellent, right, okay, brilliant. Now, we haven't really spoken one-to-one, have we?
No.
No. Do you want me to put my camera on so you can...
And you know, this is the one time I can say that your profile picture looks exactly like your face. I notice most people with Skype profiles, they post a picture, and then I'll see their picture, but then it goes to video and their face looks different.
Yeah, yeah, well, that's an actual camera picture.
You are what you get.
That's right, that's right. That's, well, this is the thing, is like, this is the big quest that I've been on for forever and why I'm kind of here on a radio station doing this thing. It's like, who the heck am I? Many things have caused me to say, if this is what's happening to me, who am I? And it got, in about 1988, I started talking with this thing that I call my higher self. Or my guides, and eventually I got to talking, asking them, like, who am I and stuff, and they said that I had, that I was half Lyran, half Pleiadian, which, you know, I'd not really heard very much about these star names or anything like that.
That's contradicting, because you're either one or you're the other, or you're from the other going to the Pleiades.
Right.
In transit, but to be of two places, you would have had to have died on Lyra, and you did not. You traveled to the Pleiades, to New Lyra, where you resided.
Right. Okay, so here's the thing. I don't remember anything. But do you remember? You must, like, if you know... And is that a collective memory that everybody has, that, like, oh, this is who that is, and, you know, you just meet them and, oh, that's who you are?
I remember what I remembered from the last, 52 years ago when I was last connected with all of my people there.
Hmm.
You share a memory with everyone, and all of their memories are shared with you. Everyone is a collective conscious, and they and their memories of who they interacted with are shared with you too.
Right.
You all are connected as one when you're on Lyra or Era or any of those planets, and it's not just limited to the planet, but everyone within that system is connected. Which means that if you share one bad thought, they all hear it.
Right.
if you try to be dishonest, they will end up being dishonest immediately. You know, if you have an insecurity, they will all hear it.
Hmm.
A simple piece of information, because there's no limitation to communication there, gets spread immensely far. And as a result of that, if we were to, let's say, bring someone with a very bad set of intentions and a bad experience in their life, and they had anger and resentment in their hearts and a massive ego to our planet, it would spread like a virus to all of our people. And there's a reason why we don't take too many without teaching them first, which is why it's better to teach them here before we take them there. Because they need to learn to control their thoughts. They need to learn to control their memories. They need to learn to control their behavior, their intentions, because those things will hurt a whole lot of people, the entire population.
You that's know, something that we don't really, that people don't really think about, people ask these questions. Oh, why don't they want to talk to us? Why do they always appear a long way away and, you know, look at us from through a lens, or, you know, that there are reasons.
It's like you're in a quarantine. It's because,
it's not because we've got diseases in our body. It's because we've got diseases in our thoughts.
Absolutely. So, as I was saying, one simple thought, if it's a bad thought, everyone will think that bad thought there. It gets replicated many, many, many times. Mm. Transmitted from one to the next in an ad hoc fashion. Just like two computers connected together through Wi-Fi without a router in between. Direct connection. Ad hoc connection.
Okay, except so that
you
takes
have this exponentially from one to the next to the next to the next to the next.
I hear you. All right, so that takes me to the idea is that if on Lyra there was one person who had a thought of revenge, then collectively there would be a collective thought of revenge. Is that right?
Absolutely. And because
is that what happened?
All of our people are so connected.
Yes.
We are not only strong, but we are also very fragile at the same time.
Mm.
You have
apparently fragile. Apparently fragile.
So mentally fragile and vibratorily fragile. We don't allow negative beings to our system for that reason. And this is also why we stray away from war much of the time, not just because of the nature of war, but because it also causes everyone to feel fear and panic all at once without a single spoken word having been said. And it causes an unbalance in the equilibrium of all of the people in that system. So we stay away from negativity. For me, being here, it's very difficult for me to stay away from negativity because it's everywhere you go. Mm. I feel it from everyone. I don't like reading people because I see not just what's on the surface, but I see everything. Mm. And a lot of very painful things. And then I feel those things. And then it draws me down to read those things. So I try not to read people, as weird as that may sound.
Oh no, I know, I get you. I've spoken to enough mediums over the last few years to know that their experience is not this great magical world of fairies and gnomes and everything, that it's like you see everybody's demons and you feel everybody's pain. And since the last couple of years, that's how I've been. I'm becoming more and more like that. I'm more and more, you know, not wanting to be around people because I can feel this pressure and the thoughts that I would have around them. You know, they don't feel like the thoughts that I like to have. You see what I mean? And, you know, I think essentially that nature is coming through. It's kind of emerging in myself, and which is why it's really valuable to speak with you.
Indeed. Now you, this is these times now, interacting with you directly is the first time that I've spoken to your face, but I've known you only through the collective conscious of everyone within our system. There was a time, JP, that you originated on Old Lyra, within the Old Lyran system. You were a traveler. You explored a lot. You went to different systems. You particularly went to the Andromedan systems and interacted with them. You were an ambassador. You enjoyed talking with people and teaching them things and sharing knowledge or sharing news of what was going on with the systems. You would bring back words sometimes of things going on out in the other systems. And sometimes you would help some of the native tribes that, you know, we harbored refugees a lot. We would bring people in from suffering worlds. We'd bring some peoples that we could save to our planets, and you would act as sometimes an ambassador and teach them. You'd teach them to meditate. You would teach them to heal. Teach them the basic 1-2-3s and ABCs of ascension.
Yep.
And these are all very common things that we knew as a people. But not all of us wanted to interact with those people, not because, again, that we didn't love them, not because that we didn't want to help them, but because being around people that are of very low vibratory states really draws us all down. But you took it upon yourself, along with many others, to step in and help out as a collective, as a small collective of what you call ambassadors, to assist and aid in the education and development of these peoples. So you made a lot of journeys to different planets, and you've spoken with peoples there, trying to spread some knowledge and teach them some good values that would help them reach their ascension. You understood back then that there were things that you couldn't say to them or teach them because of their intentions, because their maybe their use of weaponry and other things. Teaching certain peoples to develop different technologies can be either beneficial or detrimental to their entire civilization. It's like giving a society that is very primitive the atomic bomb and saying that this can be used to make energy, but they decide to use it to destroy. So little things like that were very... we had to weigh out what we taught and what we didn't. And it's not unlike me being here. I weigh out on a daily basis what to share and what not to share based on how ready the people are to hear certain things. People want technologies. They want to know how to manipulate vibratory energy using technologies and things like that, and it can be detrimental to teach such a thing unless it's used only for good. Because if it's used in a bad way, you can really destroy a planet and everything on it. Worse than a nuclear bomb, worse than an atomic war. You know, these things are, they need to be treated with respect. Knowledge is just as much a weapon as it can be beneficial.
Just think of fire. As a weapon and a tool. Yeah.
Absolutely. A simple thing like learning to make fire. What did that do to this world? Many wars have been fought with fires and catapults with flaming projectiles. And, you know, people have used fires to burn entire towns and civilizations down. You know, going back into your history, there were many different wars here on this very planet where fire was involved. You know, in almost every war, it's either a fire or it's an explosion. Or it's a projectile that they discovered that can harm a human body. There are many different things that we try to stray away from teaching people, not again because we don't want to help them evolve, but because we don't want them to destroy their evolution. So there's a yin and a yang, as I've heard said by certain civilizations. Chinese and Japanese talk about yin and yang. There's a balance to things. And as a society evolves to a point where they are ready, we teach them more. We start giving them more technologies. As they become more responsible and more wise in the way that they use them, in the way they use that knowledge. So this is something that you yourself used to take into account when teaching different civilizations, when teaching even peoples that we took in as refugees, you know, teaching them the basics before you taught them more advanced things. It, you know, teaching them ABCs and 1, 2, 3s before teaching them quantum physics. So things like that. It takes a lot of wisdom, a lot of time and existence to understand the magnitude of what a simple piece of information you share can have, the impact it can have on an entire civilization. E equals mc squared. What did that simple equation do to this world? You have Russia and the United States and other countries now with nuclear bombs aimed at each other. Their fingers on a button, they have clocks ticking down, their DEFCON numbers. You know, they keep themselves under duress of war to keep everything in check. This world should not be like that. There's no reason for war. There's no reason for these weapons. Everyone should live united and in peace at all times, in harmony with the environment, in harmony with each other, regardless of what the color of their skin is or the color of their hair or their eyes. It does not matter. Their religions or politics, all of these things, it does not, these things should not matter. This is what we call dogma. All of these things are what cause wars. Unfortunately, everything is rooted from currency and greed, and jealousy and ego, and then anger, sadness, famine, disease, wars. All of these things are rooted from one simple thing, the need for a currency to exist on a planet which should be free. So, as I was saying, teaching peoples was something that you understood very well in one of your last incarnations prior to coming here. You came here and you died. You died not because you were unable to survive. You died because the people were so, they were so brainwashed. They were very damaged people. They took what you said as blasphemy. And back in those old days, they would destroy people that they thought were a threat to their way of life. Simple things. You know, there were many occasions where you had to leave planets because people were becoming aggressive against your teachings, and you left. Not because you wanted to abandon them, but because you wanted to save your own existence. You have to make a decision sometimes when you do have the means to leave a planet because they're not ready. But not because you don't plan to come back at another time. You give them time.
Time for the things to settle and to reverberate and to splash back.
Time for them to evolve a little more so that they have time to become a better people, so that when you do come back to teach them, they're not going to burn you at the stake. Would be a good example for trying to teach something that would help them, but that they see as going against everything they believe in. But that's the problem with the belief systems of many worlds, including this one. These people are so indoctrinated, so taught, so brainwashed when they're such a young being that to disregard everything that goes outside of the bounds of what they understand. If it doesn't seem to fit in with the reality that was blindfolded over their eyes, then they disregard it immediately, or they will spit in your face, or they'll do much worse. So that's the unfortunate reality of reality. At least the reality that is painted here as a picture for these people to see.
Exactly. It reminds me of the thing that the leader of the CIA said, is that when the American people believe a complete lie, then our job will be done.
Yes, and that is really the truth in their lies, ironically. Is that the moment that everyone believes nothing but lies, they will disregard all truth. And thus, they will be within their control. So what we're trying to do now, for all of those people that are now listening and are seeking the truth, and they're ready to hear the truth because the things in their reality, in their society that was created around them started to not make sense for the first time, and now they started asking questions. They are beginning to wake up and listen at this time, and they're looking for the answers, and that's what we're here for.
Absolutely.
We're here to give those answers as clearly, in a way that they can understand as we possibly can muster. We want these people to understand everything going on in their reality so that they are no longer blindfolded. They're no longer blinded by these governments, by these societies, and that maybe they will have a chance to create a new future. A future of their own without money, without prosecution, persecution, and without
coerced, the threat of being beaten up.
Yes, the threat of being beaten up, thank you. You know, without being punished or being creative. We want them to be able to create without limitations, to be able to explore and to really expand on their understanding of this universe. We want them to traverse the universe, to leave this planet, not to abandon it, but to go and explore and see what other civilizations are doing. To do what the human species was designed to do, to be curious, to go out and explore, to get to know things that they've never known before. Evolution is the purpose of humanity. Which is ironic considering that here on this planet, evolution has been suppressed so much.
It's the last place where it's happening, it seems. But, I really think that this is the time. This is the time and moment where it is going to happen. And where the evolution, you know, where the whole, from what I can see, Audrey, the hamburger that we've made ourselves, we've minced each other, we've sliced and slashed each other in war, and we're all just like, all the races, everything is just like one big patty, all kind of stuck together, and here we are. You know, we got the two eyes, we got the nose, you know, the whole thing. I always seem to come back to this. When the IBM computers were first brought out in the 1960s, they used to actually ship the entire computer with loads of memory. But they would have it all jumpered down. They would use little jumpers, little wire ties. And in order to get an upgrade, they would fly an engineer in from Germany, cost them thousands of pounds, to pull out a jumper with a pair of pliers, and there you go, there's your 250 more K. And to me, that feels like the human being, that we've been jumpered down, and it just needs the engineer to come along and go, call all the jumpers out, and look, there you go, there's your upgrade, mate.
Absolutely, and that's the thing. We have the technologies to heal damaged bodies. We have the technologies to heal damaged DNA where I come from, where you came from. We have all of these technologies to accelerate the vibratory energy within mitochondria externally using devices. With that, we can heal, yes, using ourselves, but we found a way to make it more automated. And our technologies fix all kinds of things. If we were to take someone with, let's say, stage 4 pancreatic cancer and put them into one of our healing pods that we developed, they would heal within about 5 to 10 minutes. Their cancer would be cured, and they would look youthful again instantly.
She's having?
Be healed.
Excellent. And these are vibratory machines?
Yes,
they're not like spraying DNA samples or anything. They're just literally holding somebody what kind of frequency band are we talking?
You're talking about 60 hertz, roughly. There's a range of vibratory frequency that is used, that we use, and we project that into the human body. And we manipulate those frequencies to accelerate, just like the quarks in the filament of a light bulb.
Mm-hmm.
As the electricity enters, if they begin to heat up and glow, and then those quarks are blown out. What happens with that after the light bulb cools is that a lot of those quarks and atoms are realigned. Unlike that, it's the same process with our healing pods. We realign all of your atomic structure, your genetic structure, by merely giving the body a vibratory boost using our technology.
Mm-hmm.
It recharges all of the mitochondria and then supercharges them. It doesn't just give them only enough energy to help with the replication of the cells, but it speeds up the process immensely. And it flushes out toxins and it flushes out bad cells and immediately heals the body.
And this is 60 hertz. Oh, yeah, that's incredible. It's an acoustic frequency. And it's also the frequency of American Mains, isn't it?
Yes.
Is that a deliberate thing? Why is ours 50 in Britain?
Well, there is a range of frequencies, but 60 is the median.
Oh, I see. So it's in that band of frequency. I see.
Wanted to give you an example. That's what I gave.
Yeah, I see. Because one of them I would have thought would be about 54, which is the note of A in the 432 hertz scale. It's something I've been studying for years. Is like the whole music thing.
54 is one of them.
Uh huh.
We have a whole frequency range we use, and what the device does is it goes through them and it heals different levels of your body.
Uh-huh, yeah.
So each of your organs are resonating at slightly different frequencies, and because of that, in order to heal different types of cells, you have to hit them at slightly different frequencies. And what the pod does is it cycles through them, and it does it very rapidly.
Hmm.
As it's doing that, it covers all aspects of your genetic makeup and reconstructs your genetic structure by simply raising the vibratory state immensely. So once you exit that pod, your body has healed. Now, we can do this for minutes, we can do this for hours or many days or months. It really depends on how damaged the vessel is. You're talking beings that have been around for thousands of years, some of us. And our damage it builds up over time. Yes, we maintain very well our youth and vitality simply through meditation. And we make this a practice, although we have those pods. We do still practice, because if you were to, let's say, go to a pod where you couldn't bring that technology with you and you needed to maintain yourself, now you need to know how to do it. You also want to know how to teach others to do it, so this is a common practice for all of us. But the pods, for someone who is, let's say, nearly 2,000 years old and they are now finally breaking down to the point where meditation is no longer maintaining those cells, they will go into the pod. And their cells will be regenerated again really rapidly by accelerating the vibratory state of the quarks within their makeup, realigning their atomic structure, and recharging their mitochondria.
So we kind of give up quarks as we live, and then we need to kind of draw them back in or recharge our quark level.
Yes. Because you begin to break down just like anything does in the elements.
Mm-hmm.
It will eventually break down. And knowing how to repair that is key to survival. That's key to eternal youth. Being able to maintain your youth and your vitality, your health, your strength. It's important to know how to meditate more than just relying on technologies.
Mm-hmm.
I can sustain for a very long time without ever having to enter a pod. I don't need to do that often. I've only done that once in the past. I haven't had to do it since. But after I leave this place, I will enter another one.
Mm-hmm. And, well, there's a zillion questions. It's very much like what we're talking about, the sarcophagus from the series Stargate, where the Egyptian Ra fellow would go into his thing.
You have nothing to do with Ra.
No, right. So, but it was featured in the TV series. They would go into this box, and then they would come out again completely healed and refreshed, even having been mangled up in a battle.
Well, we never copied such a thing from a TV show. That our design was just that it was the most logical way, to wrap a body in a device without suffocating them.
Mm-hmm. So what I'm trying to get to is like what it feels like to live on Lyra. What does it feel like on New Lyra? What's the main material that you're touching all the time, or is it a variety of textures and surfaces? Are they natural? Are they artificial? Are they polished? Are they rough? What's the kind of feel of the place?
Well, it depends on what you're walking on. Out here, it'd be no different than, let's say, walking on velvet versus walking in the desert raw barefoot over rocks and sand, or walking on the beach, or walking through water. I mean, the feeling there is very much the same.
Mm-hmm.
The ground, though, the sands are more silicate based on New Lyra. So it's a little different. Sometimes the silicate sand grains, they tend to get a little warm in direct sun for too long.
Right.
So if you walk on the beaches there, it's going to feel much warmer to your feet as you're walking through it. It will feel very smooth, though.
Mm-hmm.
We have some beaches there that are so soft because of the type of bedrock we have under the oceans there. They're so soft, you walk through them, it feels like flour.
Mm.
It's immensely soft, and it's beautiful to lay in that. It feels so good to your skin, and it doesn't dry your skin either.
Fantastic.
The atmosphere there has a very distinct color. It's a very gentle, light, greenish hue because of the way that we terraform the planet. We put certain nutrients into the air itself. And as you breathe, you're breathing in some of the same nutrients that your body needs that you would get if you were to eat food as a raw vegan. So there are certain...
Sorry, can I just... This is a very thin line here. Is this a natural thing that your planet produces? Or is this like a nanotechnology? Or is it a biotechnical combination? You know, what I'm saying is do you understand where I'm going with that?
On old Lyra, there were plants that we had that would excrete their cells into the air. And they did this for replication purposes. When they landed, they would start to multiply. And much like a seed, except they didn't need water for this. The water was, they didn't need direct water at least. The humidity in the air made it conducive.
Yeah, plants.
There was another type of a plant life form that lived in the air. And it only existed as cells. And what we did was we modified that a little bit to actually have some of the same properties as some of the foods we ate. We had some of the raw nutrients, and we injected that into the atmosphere of Lyra, and what that did, of New Lyra. And what that did is it encompassed the planet over, took nearly about I would estimate about 100 Earth years, close to that. For the planet's atmosphere to be terraformed. And all the while these cells are in the air, they're also producing oxygen and excreting oxygen. It made it very easy to purify the air there and balance out the chemistry of the air so we could breathe it on the land itself. So it has a very gentle greenish hue to it for that reason, because those cells all each have chlorophyll, the same green stuff you find in plants here.
Yeah.
The same green makeup that allows them to absorb UV radiation and convert it to energy through what you call photosynthesis. So all of the freely floating cells in the atmosphere of New Lyra are like that. We did the same to Era. We did the same to Orca. Although Orca is more of a water planet, it doesn't have nearly enough land to let's say hold a big population. We have some populations there, but it's mostly a water planet. What we did there is we made a lot of floating cities on the water. So most of the land, though, is underwater. Anyway, as I was saying, Romulus, same thing. We purified the air with the same cellular structure of that plant.
Mm-hmm. What would we call this plant in English, then?
We don't have an English name for it. If you want to make a name for it, that would be okay.
Okay.
But we don't have an English name for such a thing. I'm trying to describe it as best I can, though.
Mm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So this airborne cell synthesizes energy from sunlight,
mm-hmm.
creates oxygen, and is ingestible through the lungs?
Yes.
I'm bloody-tastic. Right.
So
you don't need to grow foods or anything.
Well, we do. We still grow foods to eat, but we don't have to eat as often. We can go many days without eating solid food because of that.
Just breathing.
Just by breathing. And where here you have carbon monoxides and chemicals, aluminum and barium and all kinds of things in the air that are very toxic. There's nothing nutritious about this air here.
Yeah.
You have lots of carbon monoxide and methane gases and many other things in the air that are tearing people's lungs apart. They're destroying their capillaries. They are destroying their cellular structure simply by breathing in these toxic gases. We don't burn anything much. Very rarely do we let we've had some cultures we've brought there that still have some small rituals they like to do. And we will let them on their own continent burn fire just for a short time, but we don't normally allow carbon monoxide in the atmosphere. It harms the plant life that lives in the air.
Really? Wow. So you don't have fire. You don't use fire in a general way.
There's no need when you have technology that can manipulate the photoradionic energy. We use that to produce heat. We don't use fires to do that.
Right. And so do you have like handheld devices that can portably, you know, you go camping? Do you go camping? Or is it...
The act of camping is interesting here because it's like a game of survival
mm-hmm.
here, but we don't necessarily have to do that on New Lyra or Era or any of the other planets within our system there. Although we do visit, you know, the wildlife there, you know, the forests, the trees there, we do have trees. We do go through the forest sometimes just to do it, yes. You know, we don't have to camp, but we do sleep outside a lot.
Mm-hmm.
The UV radiation on Lyra is not high at all because of the planet's distance from the star Atlas. Atlas is much bigger than the sun, though. It still provides heat, but at the distance that New Lyra sits from star Atlas, we don't get too much UV radiation. So you can lay outside in the suns and you won't get a sunburn. Even though it's incredibly bright, you're not going to get a sunburn because of the distance of those stars.
Interesting. So the... All right, so now you're talking about, let's talk again, stellography instead of geography. Stellography, that's like, and I'm fascinated by all of the different planets around all the different stars of the Pleiades, because there's dozens of them, and a lot of them are populated, and some of them obviously are not populated because of their qualities of their atmosphere or the terrain. But let's start with Atlas. It has planet Lyra and planet Era. Is that correct?
No, Era orbits star Alcyone. Right. And so does planet Orca. Both of those planets orbit star Alcyone. And there's also a what you would call a moon or a dwarf planet that is a moon to Era as well. Orbits Era as Era orbits Alcyone. And that moon is populated as well. And it also has an atmosphere. It's about as big as Titan is to Saturn. Titan, that moon, which has an atmosphere, is about that size, that orbits Era.
Right. And it's not that much smaller than Earth, is it, Titan?
No, it's not that much smaller than Earth.
Yeah, because, I mean, Saturn is enormously huge, and we're... There's this thing on... Anyway, so...
As Era orbits Alcyone, it has a little bit of a wobble. Because you have its moon, which pulls on Era, and Era has a small wobble as it orbits Alcyone. And then Lyra has no moon. We have no moon there, but we have the different alignments of our stars there that we see from that angle, because New Lyra is so far out from the rest of the stars in the system that during certain times of the year we see Atlas align with the other stars, and it's our five-star formation, and they rise and set as one unit. Where during the other half of the year, you have a four-star formation on one side that rises and sets, and as that sets, Atlas is rising. And then that sets, and then you have the four-star formation rising. And so you get sunlight all year round during that half of the year. You get, for a whole half of our nearing year, which is about approximately four times longer than the orbit of Earth is around the sun, that would be about 24 Earth months, maybe. That we have sun all around the planet. So it's always daylight during that time, and only near the poles is it even remotely twilight. It doesn't even get that dark, so virtually the whole planet is covered in light. That's why Lyra was always the planet of light. So during the other half, it's just incredibly bright on one side of the planet and dark on the other. It gets a little cooler on the dark side at that point. It's about the closest to winter we ever get there. So the planet at that time, the coldest it ever gets on the dark side is about, I think the coldest we've ever gotten is close to your Fahrenheit, about 45 degrees to 50 degrees.
So it never gets, just slightly frozen. That's still t-shirt weather.
Yeah, that's t-shirt
weather. Oh, my God.
Very nice. On the other side of the planet, the warmest it gets because of the lack of UV radiation, because of the distance of Lyra to star Atlas. It only gets to about maybe the hottest you'll ever see. There's about 86 degrees, 85 degrees Fahrenheit.
All right. So the atmosphere in general is pretty temperate. So here I am, I'm in Scotland. When the weather's nice, out come the vampire insects. Presumably you don't have biting insects and
we don't.
Other annoyances like that.
When we found the planet, when we found New Lyra, it was still a very warm planet. Nothing really lived there at all, except some microbes. the planet was still very fresh. It was a very new planet that had just really formed, and we terraformed it. And then over time, the planet would quake, and it would. We've had some disasters there because of quakes in the past, building some cities. On your seismic scale here, we've had some quakes that were probably close to 10s or 11s, only because the planet was growing. And as it did, it formed a cavity internally. And we ended up populating also the inner side of Lyra, not just the outer side. Because the atmosphere, as it opened up at the top, the atmosphere entered the inner side too. So we ended up with a living atmosphere inside too. Although it's harder to maintain it with less light there because they require sunlight. The cells in the atmosphere require sunlight, the plant life.
I see. And there's no plasma.
So what we did is the bottom of the planet, we hollowed out the bottom of the planet there to make a hole, which made it so that the atmosphere goes in and comes out and recirculates. We ended up with a jet stream that goes around the planet, and it crosses through the centers on both sides and comes out the bottom and goes back up again. But also we have some jet streams that go around the outer, the perimeter of the planet and go along, like the jet streams you have here. They run around the circumference of the planet.
Okay.
So because of that, we have a living atmosphere inside and we have living atmosphere on the outside.
And it maintains reading. Does it pick up as it goes through the hollow Lyra? Does it pick up anything like any other kind of energies that it's then deposited on the outside in that flow?
Well, there's a very big. You'll see what looked like an aurora borealis, like here.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And we have that up at the northern and the southern poles, but it also crosses over because of the massive tilt of our planet, which sits, it's tilted this far on its axis. Because of that, you have your magnetic fields here and here, but you also have the aurora borealis because of the suns. So anytime there's a flare, we will get an aurora borealis that covers a whole side of the planet.
Mm.
And it's absolutely beautiful.
Mm.
The convection currents, because of the hole at the top and the hole at the bottom of Lyra, there's a vacuum effect going in from the north, but then it's the opposite coming out the south. It pushes out the south, but it sucks in through the north. So you have this going up and around. The atmosphere rotates like this, goes around,
yes.
In, comes out the bottom, and comes back up.
In your classic vortex.
It's like
toroidal vortex, yes.
Era started doing the same thing. We had a lot of quakes there. Some people died because of those quakes. We had to evacuate some of those cities there as the planet was growing. And that one is still growing. Era is still quaking and moaning and growing as it's expanding because of centrifugal force and heat pressure on the inside of the planet's pushing out. And it's starting to create a nice hollow inside forming. It's not as big of a cavity as we have on New Lyra.
Mm-hmm.
Much smaller. But it's been growing and expanding, and it quakes a decent amount. But a lot of our buildings we built there now, they have more resistance to earthquakes. They move naturally with the land so that nothing gets destroyed and people can live without fear of buildings falling in on them.
Good roots. Audrey,
It's been near, we're coming up to 52, we're towards the end of the 55 minute slot. It's been a fascinating conversation. I would love more and more. Little life on Plead is life, you know, what it's like to live it from the inside out. And it's just so valuable to us. I mean, really, I can't express how, I mean, how, you know, some of the things you said totally moved me. You know, I was in tears when you were talking about, things, about the, you know, teaching the younger races and things like that. That was beautiful. So thank you for that. Do you have a website, or would you like one? Are you going to have one? Are you gonna, or would you like to just keep doing these interviews and then people will build up their picture, which they can put out to others? Is that the plan?
I don't know. Should we make a website? I never considered making a website. More so because if I were to make one, I would fear that certain individuals here would try to find me.
Mm-hmm. How about a show, a regular show? I have a slot on Sunday where I have another gentleman called Simon Parks who answers questions. Would you like to do a regular show where you answer questions from the audience?
We could talk about that some more. That might not be a bad idea.
Yeah, so that people can very slowly and from their own questions learn about who we really are. Because truly, truly, Audrey, you are who we really are, and we are a shadow, a jumpered down version. As I was saying about the idea of been jumping down, that's all with the clothes and all this stuff. And so we need to really jump down and get by ourselves. Our own.
Listeners, Fortune Radio, now we return you to your host.
That's gone. it just goes on for long and long and long. And welcome back. Now we are in real time. Okay, we're time delayed by about 4 or 5 hours there. I recorded that previous conversation, that conversation previously with Audrey. For me, that was very moving and touching and incredibly insightful into us as who we are, who we can be. I look forward to continuing to explore the universe and our history and who we really are with Audrey in the future. But now, in the real time, I have another guest who's also very special. Another new friend who's just kind of, Jay, you've just landed on my planet just a couple of weeks ago. teleported in almost. Now from Vancouver, British Columbia, Joanna the Medium, as you're known. How are you?
I'm great. How are you, JP?
Well, as we've been talking, it's like, do you really want to know? It's kind of, if you really want to know how people are, they're going to tell you, oh man, like, as I would say, you know, I woke up this morning and it felt like somebody had hit me with a wooden stick. You know?
That sounds pretty consistent, yeah.
My left hand, and I'm right-handed, and my left hand feels like I've been punching someone all night, or something.
Maybe you have.
Well, you know, first of all, I'm right-handed, and, second of all, I'm not a kind of fighter kind of guy. I got really self-gentle hands, you know, I hit keyboards and stuff. So a fist fight would not be, I don't know, it doesn't sound in character to me, whatever happened, that's how I felt this morning. I was like, oh wow, oh, it takes me a little while. And, there you are, you're reporting a similar sort of thing, you know, you woke up, along with the flotsam and jetsam on the beach after the tsunami kind of thing. So,
Hopefully you've picked yourself up, dusted you down, and showered yourself since then. How are you? What's been going on for you?
Well, do you have an hour?
Yeah, I have almost exactly an hour. Let's just shoot that breeze.
Well, I wrote some things here of what I thought I might mention as just, you know, as a conversation piece, but also something fascinating. Last week, and this has never, ever, ever happened to me before. I've heard of this happening, but I kind of never paid attention to it. I woke up in the middle of the night with some intelligence force being that I would describe as not negative but dark entity holding me down by my chest and almost as if to say, stay down. I woke up screaming. It's never happened before.
When was that?
I want to say last week ago, maybe a week and a bit.
Yeah, so that it just feels like there's been wave after wave of fear-mongering, scaremongering, psychic attack, digital attack.
Is that what it was? Because when I woke up screaming, there was a hand on my frickin' chest, literally, and I kept feeling it coming closer and closer and closer, and it was a big energy. I didn't see any face. It felt dark to me. I don't want to give it a negative or positive spin, but it was, and then when I started to scream, it pulled away, but it pushed me down. Like, it was holding me.
Well, that's very interesting. You sound to deter it, and it actually does work.
So, does it work? Well, I guess it has to work because then I woke up, right?
Yeah, exactly. So you got yourself out of it. Well done.
So I told my husband, and I don't know if listeners know, but my husband is he's a CA. He's a chartered accountant by trade. So, you know, very right-brained individual. And I said this to him, and he says, what does this mean? Do we have to smudge the house?
He
actually said that. So that same day we came back and we smudged the whole house. I've never in a million years thought he would have said that. And he actually liked the smell. It's like, what the hell?
Well, there you go. And maybe next year you'll be doing accountancy college classes. So,
oh God, I don't know.
So that was a few days ago. So you said this morning, you know, you were even waking up with this feeling like you're going through a war. And this weekend has felt like, you know, it's been really intense. To me, it feels, you know what it feels like? You know, they say that the sun is moving into a new area of space that's more dense, that's more particulate. It's more like driving into grit. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it feels like psychically we're doing that too. And maybe that's what the fourth dimension is. This is maybe what moving through the fourth dimension is that we're pushing through this stuff that just like keeps knocking us over. But we can pick ourselves up and repair ourselves because that's how we are.
Well, it's interesting because when I was recording one of my videos today, and I think it's actually the first one that's your sign, I believe. You're Libra, right? Libra?
I'm Libra rising. I'm Pisces sun with Libra rising.
So it was Libra, and it was the first recording that I did, and because I'm way behind. And the message was actually mostly channeled. It was about the vibrations changing, and it was interesting the way it was said that the vibration is becoming higher, or the frequency is becoming higher. But it's not that the frequency is becoming higher. It's our consciousness is changing, and therefore we're able to perceive a higher vibration, which was an interesting spin on my understanding of it.
Absolutely. It's a bit like, well, if you could shift your visual spectrum from the red to the blue. Now, here's the thing. You know, they say that women can see more shades of red than men.
That's what I hear.
And men can see more shades of blue than women.
Oh, that I didn't know.
Yeah. Well, certainly what women call, or what people, you know, have labeled as a dysfunction, which is called colorblindness, it's not. It's just a different form of color vision. Actually, I'm going to have to talk to Audrey about this. Audrey, if you're listening, is color, you know, red-green color blindness because of the different frequencies? Anyway, yes.
Something just went quiet.
Am I still here? Something happened on your end. Joanna, I've lost you. Hold on while we treat the girl. Have I lost the station? No, I haven't, have I? Have I lost Studio B? I think I might have lost everybody. Oh. Typical. Oh, no, there we go. We're back. Joanna. Joanna. You went dead, but you are still connected. Eventually we'll come back into real time. And you'll hear me singing all kind of all compressed. Oh yes, that's the way it goes. Can't believe it. Alright, let's see how well my my Skype connection is. Maybe I should just see if I can go online. And I think I'm still online with Revolution Radio. And that, Joanna, are we back with you? I've had this all evening. Oh, now I've lost the studio. Right. Oh, God. So, what I'm watching on my screen is the studio going in and out. All right, here we go. That's a group call. Let's see. Right, Joanna.
Yes, I'm back.
Good. We're back in real time. I presume that I'm on the station. Let me just check on the, on my feed. We've been hit a couple of times, and I don't know why they should pick on our show, but let's see. Hmm. All right, well, I got a couple of minutes delay on that, but that's all right. I'm still there. Anyway, so where were we? We were feeling like, okay, so like the sun going through walking through a very kind of gritty kind of river, I was saying, is this what the fourth dimension feels like? Is this the ascension process? What do you think?
That's certainly what it sounds like with the very limited knowledge that I have. But when I was recording this message and when I was channeling, it became all of a sudden very apparent to me. I don't know how, don't ask me, I have no logic behind this. But it became very apparent to me that is the work going forward that I will be doing. And then I went, oh, crap. And the reason I went, oh, crap, is because a lot of the message was about how to find one's own light. And then instant I said that out loud. I thought, oh, God, there's going to be a whole bunch of unhappy people with this message.
So why do you say, all right, okay, finding your own light. And what's really interesting is that the previous guest, who I had on the pre-record, has mm-hmm. recommended a meditation. Okay, and this meditation is to imagine and picture, image, not to pretend, but that's really there, a star, not like a hexagon or something, but like a real sun, like the sun in the sky. See, my phone agrees. And you imagine that glowing brighter and brighter. And that's how you find your own light. That's what they mean by the light in your heart mm-hmm. and everything. And that's the meditation that they do to keep themselves youthful and healed all the time.
Mm. Very interesting.
So... So, are you still with me? Have I lost you again?
I'm with you. Yes, there is a bit of a feedback.
Oh yeah, that's because don't worry. Hang on, let me just. You won't hear the feedback anymore, will you? Now.
Oh, okay, good.
Yeah, because I had the speaker on.
So, were you asking why I had that thought that there's going to be a lot of unhappy people?
Yes, indeed.
At that moment, it was just all of a sudden this inner knowing that I've done this before and I've died doing it.
Now that's very interesting, because that's exactly what he said as well.
And I can feel it in my throat right now. And, You know, hopefully we don't live in a world where I will get killed by this, but there's definitely a sense of, you know, when you empower people to find their own light and follow their own inner being, well, there's a lot of stuff out there that ends up being not very useful. And those who sell this stuff, whether it be through ideas, ideology, whatever, you know, are not very happy with that. That's what I felt.
Very true. I've been hit all evening. I've been going fine until we started talking about how to heal yourself quite easily, but with your own mind by imagining a sun bursting, you know, glowing forth from within your chest.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you just keep repeating that over and over again, and you keep saying that's how you heal yourself without medicines and pharmacology, you just imagine a sun from inside your chest and glowing out and falling on everybody that you see. You know?
Yeah, I'm assuming part of this realization, part of this knowing was just being in this particular moment that I wasn't yesterday, and just whatever was channeled through just kind of activated that knowing. Not necessarily a memory, but it was a definite, oh, yep, I've done this many times before, oh crap.
Yeah, and this is the thing, that we have tried this over and over again, and apparently this is attempt number 7, but we're definitely a lot way further than we've tried before. You know, we're further down the road to success than we ever have been. So there's a lot more hope, and hopelessness is a thing that they try to lay on us. That's another trauma that we can heal. I believe.
And so speaking on that, there was I was going through a meditation last week, around the same time where I had that hand on my chest, and I went through a very deep, deep state, and I was actually shown Time of Jesus. Now, keep in mind, I'm not a religious person. I was born into Catholicism, but I don't subscribe to religion. As a matter of fact, for most of my life, when I heard the word religion and Jesus, I would get that weebie-jeebies. Like, there was obviously some kind of inner not wanting to go near it. And I was actually shown, there's a few things. One of the things that I was told is that, you know how the religion talks about, you know, suffering and sin and human suffering and all that? And whoever this voice was told me, it was a male voice, he said, the separation from the pure love is the suffering. Everything else is secondary. Yeah. And I thought, wow, that was fascinating. And then he showed me Jesus, and I'm thinking, why are you showing me Jesus? I'm not even a religious person. And he showed me that Jesus died for sin, but the sin was not because we're bad people. The sin is our ignorance. And what he was trying to show, that according to my vision, that in the physical body, him being a human, he was an example of how every human being has the ability and potential to do what he did. And it was that message that he was spreading that made all the other people very unhappy.
So Hello? Indeed, yeah. oh yeah, we're getting hit like the jackpot today. Are you with me still?
Oh yeah, sure. Yeah.
Good.
So I thought, you know, that's very interesting. And as I started to logically think about it, yeah, it does make sense. You know, when you basically tell people that they have the potential within themselves to do amazing feats. Well, what happens to all the people who tell you that you are not good enough, that you need to, you know, work for your sins in order to have salvation, blah, 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 right? And the other thing that was
slave mentality.
Yeah, and the other thing that was shown to me, it was fascinating. The whole idea of fear was shown to me as something that is difficult to go through, obviously, because it has various, you know, it's various shades of fear, but the fear itself, I was told, that has the greatest potential for change for spirit. And the whole idea behind fear, and I'll use the term religion in quotation marks, is the voice said, according to many religions, God is portrayed as an imperfect God. And when I asked the question, why? And the voice said, well, if God is perfect, how can he create children who sin? That's an imperfection. It makes no sense. And I thought, huh, that's really interesting. And when we are told that we're sinners, and from the moment that we're born, we're sinning, what it does, it makes us doubt. Doubt creates fear. So our entire lives, we doubt who we are. We continuously try to be somebody, to be worthy of something, where the very basic point is, we are already all that. But the fear...
Amen!
Yeah, but the fear creates the different... It's like we put on... It was shown to me, if we put on certain glasses, and it's through these lenses we choose to experience our physical existence, and through fear, there is that's the greatest potential of change for the spirit, or to experience life. It was fascinating.
Is that a piano playing in the background?
Yeah, but it's so low, I'm surprised you can actually hear
it's
it.
It's lovely. It's just really cool. It's like, oh, just sort of atmosphere.
So then a few days later, going back on the same subject, I have a client who comes in. So I have my client who comes in, and he brings in a friend. And the moment I see his friend, I go, okay, there is something different with this person. So I finish with my client, and my friend comes in. He wanted a past life regression. And right, so this is... So listen to this. This is a person who comes in for past life regression, and he's a cardiologist. And right away I go, shit. Because very much in right brain, right? And somebody who's that right-brained is often, it's often challenging to get to a very relaxed state, especially for the very first time. And he sits down and we kind of chat, and he says, you know, I want you to do this, this and that. And I said, you know, I can't do this for you. You have to do this for yourself. And he says, well, I'm not very suggestible. And I said, well, I guess we're not going to have a session then, are we? Because, you know, if you're already saying to yourself you're not suggestible, you can't relax. So I thought, oh my God, what am I dealing with? So anywhere, he says, I'll try my best. Within 5 minutes, he was out like a light. But
you're a professional.
The next thing, he started to talk, and I was like, oh my God, what is this? So long story short, he connected to his soul, who does not live on this earth. Now, whatever's going to come out of my mouth next is bizarre, probably not to you, but to many people out there, certainly my husband. And he said to me, he's not from this planet, but where he's from is a void. And his consciousness or creature, whatever you want to call it, are meant to, it's almost like they're meant to destroy the planet, but not for the sake of destroying, but the sake of rebirthing. And every few thousand years, they, like, destroy planet Earth so that it can harvest brand new and start new growth and new potential. And the way he was talking to me was very bizarre. It's not, I mean, I've had a few experiences with people from different planets, but not like him. And he described himself like a gray matter, that it's just, there's intelligence, there's no body, and they eat humans, and like, WTF.
So he's a necrotic.
He didn't call it a name, but I said to him, I said, why are you on Earth? And this was earlier corroborated by my guide, which I didn't tell him, but he actually said that, you know, there is a process to this, and that's just the way, it's like black and white. There's no emotions attached to it. It's that's what they're created for. And it happens every few thousand years. But there's all, with that process, there is respect. He chose one time to come in and destroy, but with hate. And because of it, he's now on Earth being a cardiologist who saves people's hearts. And I thought, how ironic. And he said to me in his state that he's now starting to see humanity from a different point of view, where his soul is now in conflict within itself. It's in conflict because he's now starting to see the beauty and the harmony and the love within people. But this other aspect of him that was created to destroy is now is a conflict.
And that's how we make peace in the galaxy.
And I thought, this is freaking fascinating. Mm. Oh my God. And my guide said that his reincarnation on Earth is not a matter of punishment, but rather retribution. And I thought to myself later, isn't that one and the same?
I'm not sure.
So that was a mind bender, but I guess it was a mind bender meant for him, not for me. Yeah, so that was actually fascinating.
Retribution, yeah, so retribution yeah. versus punishment.
Yeah, my guide said it's not punishment we seek of you, but rather retribution. So for him to say that, it must have some distinction. Mm. Maybe his soul understands. Yeah, I don't yeah. know.
Well, the idea of punishment is that retribution is something, a personal thing. I'll get you back for this. Whereas punishment is you transgressed, and this is what happens to everybody who transgresses.
Mm.
See?
Mm. Interesting. So all of this is happening in my environment in the last week and a half.
Meanwhile,
yeah. And yesterday I wake up feeling so emotional, and this entire time I'm feeling like I want to cry, like I want to scream. I don't know what's going on. All this pain that I'm feeling, emotional, that I thought was dealt with years ago. And all I keep seeing is an image of me bent over on a toilet and some being behind me helping me purge.
Takes you back to those teenage years, doesn't it? I had a club with the, and the, it's always like the makeup down the cheeks and the high heels, you know, cause I remember the high heels. Oh yeah. Anyway.
and the lipstick, I'm sure.
And the lippy all over the face. You can't do it after 15 vodkas. You just really can't.
Mm-hmm. No. What about you?
Yeah. Well, that was me, you know, but no, meanwhile, purging. There's been a wave of like a stimulus to grief. Mm-hmm. Is really the feelings that I've been getting is like, these are the things that have upset me in the last few years. Now I understand what they are and what mm-hmm. they really are, rather than the thing that had masked it, because I hadn't dealt with the thing that it really was, because right. I didn't even know what the thing what it really was, because there was something that was masking it.
Right,
and that's
exactly.
The whole thing. It keeps going. It's like Gary Cassidy always used to say, the truth is different at every layer. And that's the same thing with your psychological overlays, these programs. We have programs over programs over programs over programs. But what I've been trying to do is get back to the original thing that made us programmable and release that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the layer thing.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of emotions that are being released, but I'm actually seeing and exactly how you said it. It's, you know, the emotion comes up and then, you know, I try to figure it out, but then there's this actual pain behind it all. And it's just, it's profound. It's not scary. It's uncomfortable as hell. It's not pretty, but it's so enlightening at the same time. It's crazy.
Yeah, well, this is what I call a feeling, right? And it occurs and it bubbles up, and it unpacks itself like a zip file into the whole story of why that hurts right there.
Mm-hmm.
So what's the story been coming up for you?
Well, it's interesting you asked that question, because I thought maybe I should say. So while I have
yeah,
like
maybe you should.
Yeah, and let's open
the flower, shall we?
While I had that experience with the Jesus moment and the sin and all that in the same meditation, I was also shown the aspect which I have chosen to work on most in this lifetime. And though I kind of understood it on a logical level, it was shown to me in its entirety and its enormity, and that is fear of judgment. And it comes in many shades and flavors, and I have, you know, I have different pieces all throughout my entire path. path, starting with my mom. But I felt the enormity and the weight of it, and it was unfrickin' believable. I never knew. It was enormous. It also showed me that I chose to go through this existence having a conscious knowing and understanding of who I am, and having to weave and ebb through all the dogmas and the judgments and the belief system and all of that while staying true to who I am and not allowing others to put me down, especially with the fear of judgment. How hard, not so much hard, but how much energy it's requiring of me to accomplish. I never knew.
But you've got the power behind it as well. And this is the transmutation of the fear that you were talking about earlier.
I guess if I didn't have it, I wouldn't put myself through it, but just to feel the enormity of what the fear and how it weighs on me and always had, and all the different pieces and people that represented different aspects of that fear, it was like mind-blowing. Absolutely freaking mind-blowing. So I believe I'm shown these things when I'm ready to see them. And I believe they have a greater purpose than just kind of like, you know, oh, now I know, and, you know, I go forward. But it also explains a lot of things, even as simple as the comment I made earlier that the channeling I made for this particular YouTube video for September, it might upset a lot of people. And that's part of what I just said. There's that fear attached to it.
Well, here's the thing, you know, it's right. Okay. So here's the thing, Joanna, we're here at the crossing. And there are a lot of reports that are going on saying it's all clear, that it's time now to start, because those agencies that were looking towards trying to stop what you were trying to stop, they're mm-hmm. looking elsewhere, because they're all distracted by the great big thing in the sky that's kind of sending missiles their way.
Mm.
So we have the moment now to... kind of to unroll our canvases and mm-hmm, see what big letters we can create on the planet. Do you know what I'm saying? So
yeah, and there's a part of me that goes, what harm can little Joanna do?
Yeah, how much damage do you think this one little Canadian girl can do? So
exactly.
Well, look, like Audrey was saying in the first hour. You know, it can take one thought to change a planet, one bad thought to change a planet. What about one good thought can change a planet if we're all collectively conscious? And we are becoming more and more collectively conscious.
Mm-hmm.
And those who are tuning into the collective conscious, which is the pulse beat, it's the heartbeat. Mm-hmm. Those who are tuning into the heart are able to tune in to this collective knowledge that Audrey says, you know, we won't need the internet soon because you just tune into your heart. Who do you want to talk to? There you are. You know, hello, how are you? Well, I know how you are.
Yeah,
how am
I? I truly believe that's going to be available to us. Maybe not to all of us because there are people who choose not to, but, you know, certainly.
Well, I think the problem is, the problem here lies is that, everybody's going to know why it is that they wanted to kill people like you and me. Because what would happen if everybody did wake up all at once? Mm-hmm. And that's actually what's going to happen, is that everybody is going to wake up all at once. And all of the information that you and I have been downloading for years and years and years will all get we become the servers. We become the download the download mirrors of the universal consciousness, like a transformer.
Yeah.
And so there's a high voltage, and it can get really tiring. So it's really important to for everybody who's involved in this kind of thing. And I'm definitely sure that a lot of my listeners and a lot of the people who have tuned in to listen to this on YouTube will get the sense, you know, we need to rest. We need to understand that we're behind enemy lines. That's when you wake up and you realize that what your job is to do is not to sit there and suffer and complain, but everything that you feel complained about, everything mm-hmm. you're plaintive about, you can change. That's why you're there. That's why it irritates you, is because you've got the capability and the wherewithal to do so. And anybody yeah. who says they can't is mm-hmm. just lying to themselves, because they actually can. Because this is the magical power of the soul and the purpose of the plan to which they have assigned themselves to, in order to get here into the final stage of this plan stroke learning experience stroke training. Mm-hmm. What do you think, Joanna?
I do too, but what I'm thinking also, not, there's no but, what I'm also thinking is, and this just kind of popped into my head, during that meditation, there were few pieces that kind of came to me out of nowhere, and one of them was actually Donald Trump, believe it or not. And I'm not a supporter nor non-supporter. I'll just kind of leave that one aside. But he was shown to me, and I thought, why am I being shown this? And I was shown how he too has to deal with a lot of judgments, and he too deals with personal issues that he is not showing off to the audience. But there is a purpose in what he does, as bizarre as it may seem to other people. And in many ways, he creates fear. But again, what was shown to me about fear, that fear has the greatest potential to change.
Absolutely. If you want to change something, you have to know which way to go. And the way to go with Trump is away from Trump. You know, everything about Trump is the kind of opposite of how we mm-hmm. want to be humane. And he's really, he's like spiteful and separative and all of these things. But a lot of people like that because it satisfies what is the damaged base center. You know?
Yeah, but when I look at it even higher, like when they show it to me higher, like him, you know, a lot of people don't like him, and I'm going to kind of reserve my own judgments on that. But his purpose is to create fear, because fear has the greatest potential to change. So there's a purpose in what he does on a higher level. So I actually got a new perspective on him when she was shown to me that way, because he's a key component of creating change if we choose to create change.
Exactly. You have to know what you don't want in order to know what you want.
Yeah.
So this is the thing. This is the way that we need to go. If we want to improve our life, we have to find all the things that we're complaining about. And then, instead of complaining about it, do something about it. Do one little thing, one tiny movement. One tiny movement. If you're complaining that your house is always a mess, then, you know, do tidy up one little square mm-hmm. meter a day.
Yeah.
And by the time of 10 days, that's quite a lot of room.
That's right.
Yeah. By 2 weeks, it just keeps going. You have to, you can't, all right, the trick, people. Just don't stop. Everybody stops, then everybody gives up. Oh, I'm not a quitter. So they finish, one day, and then boom, no.
Mm-hmm.
So don't commit so much. Maybe say do once a week or once a month. Just commit what you can. You know, nobody's asking you to commit your entire life to things. But if you want to change things, the more you do it, the more they'll change and the better things get.
And the funniest thing, funny being in quotation mark, is that the way at least it's being shown to me is that the greatest change one can make within the world is to start finding their own light within. That's where it begins. Because as soon as we connect to that light within, our whole entire perspective shifts and changes. And then as a result of that, we emanate a different energy, which emanates a different energy, blah, 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 blah. So that's why I always keep getting the same message over and over. The greatest gift one can give to themselves is to find the love within.
So love. A lot of people don't grow up with love.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
I, yeah, yeah. so many. I saw the most terrible cartoon today. But it's about living in a loveless, growing up in a loveless household, for instance. Mm-hmm. And growing up in a loveless womb. And mm-hmm. Being inseminated in a loveless way. And it goes all the way back.
Right.
And relating in a loveless fashion.
Right.
And it all, lovelessness begets lovelessness, and eventually we get to that place. This is what you're talking about, where we are with the Donald Trump. That's what, as we say, the epitome of lovelessness. So we want the opposite of that. What would that look like? What would that feel like? And how happy would you, Joanna the Medium, be?
Well, I'll tell you what it felt like when I felt it at 25% of my capacity, or of its capacity.
25% and counting.
Exactly. I actually asked the question. It was a feeling, and I actually said, is this what love feels like? And I was told, you're only capable of handling 25% for your vehicle is not able to handle more. It was out of this frickin' world. It was nothing compared to anything I've ever felt. Nothing. It brought me to my knees.
It's a funny thing, this whole thing about the knees, isn't it?
Why
does love make you weak at the knees, Joanna?
I have no idea. That's interesting.
But it's true, isn't it? It's the whole thing, she made my knees go.
I guess maybe knees represent stability and the sheer enormity of that emotion. Mm. It just buckles you up,
So you couldn't move forward. You had to sit where you were and experience this energy, right?
It was what I would term bliss because there was no other words that I could find. But there is no feeling in this world that resembles anything even remotely close to what I felt before. And I was told it was only 25% that I could handle.
Okay, well, fair enough.
Yeah,
that's a bargain. 25 sounds like even 5% would be nice. That would be a nice afternoon.
And at that moment, I also understood, and I might have said this before, I understood why we can't feel it, because if we did, we would be like walking freaking zombies. Mm-hmm. Nothing matters.
Yeah. It'd be like
Nothing
heroin.
Matters.
Be like a heroin addict. That's exactly what it is to be a heroin addict, is to be in that place all the time.
And now it makes sense to me logically why people go to drugs. If that's what they feel, I don't blame them. I can see how that can be addictive.
Yeah.
Aside from the whole chemical component and the physical, aspect on the brain. Mm. But I can see, it's intoxicating, literally.
Exactly, intoxicating. So, it's good to have once in a while because it's very regenerating.
Yeah. I felt like it reminded me just for a moment who I am. And when the voice said, remember who you are, you're not your body, you're pure consciousness, a spark of God, and therefore you are God. It reminded me and I'm not a God, and I'm not a religious person. I used to have, I still do to a huge extent, some weird feelings toward religion. I must have been slaughtered before for religion. I'm sure of it. Otherwise,
oh man, we've all been made mincemeat by the old Inquisition. Hey, listen, Joanna, we have a caller in area code 970, wherever that is. So, first of all, would you like to introduce yourself and say where you are? And bye-bye. Oh, they go away. Maybe it was just the call to listen.
Maybe.
The call to listen number is different. It's, you can find it on wallspiritradio.com/listen. And it's at the top of the page, and we really ought to put it on the main page, I suppose. So you can also find it through TalkStream Live and Ever Beyond. And anyway, so this is Journeys with JP, and I'm talking to Joanna, the medium from Vancouver, British Columbia. I had a cousin in Vancouver. He was a test pilot back in the day.
No longer?
He was my father's nephew or something, or maybe his brother-in-law. Anyway, cool people. Medicine Hat was the name of the place they lived in.
Oh yeah, that's Alberta.
Yeah, uh-huh.
Yeah, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
Yes.
And yeah. So meanwhile, mm-hmm. back in Joanna's world, what was going on?
Well, I still can't get over this black mass thing person. You called it a name?
Did I?
You gave this entity a name.
Frederick. No?
No. My client who connected to his soul, who wasn't, you know, from this, you know, planet. You gave it a name.
Did I?
Yes!
Oh, man. No, it was. If you can remember it, or somebody in the audience can, I don't remember it. Yeah, sometimes names just come through. Sorry, I name things.
Was it given to you? Was probably given to you.
Yeah. The names are always given to you. And like my friend, he has these machines, and he keeps saying, you know, what's this one called? And I just hear the name Neville. You know, that's his like one his pump. It's kind of, you know, electric pump, and it's now called Neville. And the other one's the other machine pump is called Nile. You know, like. Because they do the job of diggers. They like, actually do okay. the job of Irishmen. So they got Irish names. So anyway.
Oh. But the intelligence that is apparently supposed to, you know, clean out the planet every so often. Are you aware? Have you read about this before?
Oh, yes. Necrotic was the word I used.
Yes.
Well, it's like what I says is like I call them necrotic bacteria, necrotic life forms, like mold. So that when your body is ready to, once it's died, and mm-hmm. it's ready to go back to the earth. It's the thing, it's the mold that breaks the body up into its component nutritional chemicals and rots it back down. It's mold that does it. So the thing is, we have mold in our body that is trying to do it while we're still alive, and that's the problem of what I call the nung, and what everybody else calls candida overgrowth.
Yes, okay. So when he was talking about eating humans, like, I actually didn't believe that he would eat humans.
Yeah, so it's not the way it's not like sort of picking them up and chomping their heads off. It's more like
that's what I was envisioning.
Absorbing them in the way that mold eats a tree.
Oh, when it rots okay, down. Very interesting.
Yes? It's a natural process. It's got its place. Everything has its place in nature, doesn't it?
Yeah, and the way he was describing and the way he was talking, and I was, you know, he was having a difficult time with being in a physical body and not understanding, but, you know, just having a conflict. And, you know, I was trying to tell him that you're doing a really good job with saving people and, you know, being, you know, kind. And he was very pointedly and bluntly said, "You're very nice, but what you're telling me is a lie." I'm like, okay. There was no emotion to him whatsoever.
Well, he's, you know, he's now incarnated as... See, the thing about any consciousness that has had a human focus on it and pay it attention becomes a living creature. That's why they say that we are creator gods.
Mm.
Anything that you give a name to eventually will evolve into a thing. Oh, my God.
Oh my god!
I just realized that those machines may, you know, that Irish Navi one day would become a sort of, well, you know, in probably the consciousness will inhabit a robot, and will be happy digging and you know, singing songs to itself.
The one thing he did say, he kept looking towards the light, which is interestingly what you talked about in the meditation, and. When he kept looking at the light, he started to cry, like he became very emotional. And I said, who is the light? And he said, light is God. And I said, why are you, you know, why do you do what you do? And he says, because God made me. And I said, did you not have a choice? And he said, no. And I thought, okay, that's very interesting. But then I said, well, who created the stars and the moons? And he's kind of laughed at me. He says, well, God, like, duh, Joanna. but what I'm trying to communicate is that he felt such love towards it or from it. But at the same time, he had, hatred for himself for what he's done. And I thought, fascinating.
You know, it's all about timing. You know, yeah. Whether something is good or bad is all about timing.
Yeah, and the hatred was towards him disrespecting the humankind.
Yeah. So he was maybe a little premature at times to take the life. You know, like over-enthusiastic Grim Reaper.
Yeah, he actually said he disrespected the process. That's what happened.
Yeah, he just got a bit blasé about it. Okay, you, thwick, 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 you know, slap him in the sack, out the way, you know. Yeah. And just like a bit, disrespectful and debasing.
Mm. Very interesting.
So have you helped him connect with his base?
Yes, as a matter of fact, I mean, I don't know if I did or not, but as a matter of fact, when he was in the state, he said that when he was waiting for us outside, because he couldn't be in the same room as his friend, which was my client, he said that his kind were hovering around him and they didn't want him to go in. And I asked him why, and then he said they didn't want me to know the truth. They didn't want him to be aware of who he was.
Well, that's very interesting. You know, he could do well with listening to the Andronicus transmissions, because we have a character called Kraton who takes on the darkness. Yeah.
And I asked him, wouldn't they want you to know? And he said, because I now can feel for the human race because I'm part of it, and that puts me in a conflict within myself. And I said, well, isn't that good? Because then when you can go back, you can talk about, you know, compassion and all this thing. And he says, that's why they didn't want me to come here. Interesting, eh?
So he will become a messiah for his people.
Sounds like.
And that sounds like he's got a really hard job, because, I can feel that would be a very, very hard job and a brave thing to do.
And he is saving people's lives. He's a cardiologist.
Exactly.
Like,
he's really perfect. And it is all about coming back into the heart and being heartful instead of heartless.
Yeah.
And so
I just thought it was brilliant.
Is this the path for the Nazis? Everybody, they all learn how to be cardiologists and help people's hearts instead of, you know, ripping them out of their chests.
And the interesting part was that he said, you know, as a cardiologist, and there was the first time I met a cardiologist or a person that's such right-brained, being so connected to the other side, but clearly because he's a little bit different, right? Because that's not the norm. Mm-hmm. Typically, they're very reserved in any kind of spiritual, because they're scientifically based. But what I found interesting was that he said it wasn't so much that he felt pain and suffering for the person that he ultimately knew was going to die but couldn't tell, but it was for the family that the person would eventually leave. That's who he felt pain for the most.
Yeah, that would be the... Well, it certainly would put him in the position of being able to sense... Because somebody with that kind of karma gets probably a fourth ray, and they can feel the energy of people. They become empathic. Much their confusion, and usually to detriment, because they don't know what to do about it. They just feel it.
Exactly.
Which indeed, as you were saying, is punishment, not retribution.
No, they said it's retribution we seek, not punishment.
Right, okay. So... How does that then fit in with your cardiologist?
Well, I left that for him to ponder, because I felt that it was a mind bender for him to figure out, not for me to translate for him. But the way I felt it for my guide when it came through, punishment felt like, okay, this is what you're going to do because we're punishing you for it. Retribution felt to me like, okay, I'm choosing to do this because for what I have done, I'm not being forced to do it. That's how it felt to me. So retribution almost felt by choice, but also with the pain attached to it. Punishment is you being told to do something.
So I see. So it's not like a violent retribution. I'm going to pay you back for this, but like I'm going to try and fix the mess that I caused.
Yes, yeah. and you know, with all that comes all the feelings that are attached to it, which are very, you know, substantial and profound. That's how I felt it when the message was delivered through me, and retribution felt heartfelt as opposed to punishment being you got to do this because you fucked up. Excuse my French. That's what it felt like.
Beep. Apparently I'm supposed to disconnect you, but we've got 3 minutes to go, so it doesn't matter. And we're on Studio B and Wolf Spirit Radio. On Wolf Spirit Radio, you can say whatever the heck you want. But, I try to say heck instead of, but you know, that's fine. Listen, it's good.
I said whatever the block you want.
Yes. Anyway, but however the words are, the idea is that it's healing the pain that it's caused in the past by understanding, mm-hmm. by understanding the pain and feeling the pain of the loss of what mm-hmm. happens to the loved ones.
Mm-hmm.
Very interesting. Very interesting, ideas. Thank you very much. You've got a website? What's your website? I want you back for a whole hour sometime. So, can you do it on a Sunday? Can you do Sundays?
Not this. Are we on air?
We're currently on air. We've got about 5 minutes to go. We talk about it another time. So tell everybody about your website now.
But my website is www.joannathemedium.com and my YouTube channel is the same, joannathemedium.com.
JoannaTheMedium.com. And I'm JPTheLarge.com. Had to say that old. Anyway, we're about 1 minute, 2 minutes away from the end of the show. It's been delightful to have you. I want to have you back. Maybe we then do pre-records or something. We've got to find some other way of doing this. But
I would love to. And thank you so much for having me.
And we've had some fun in different places and off air, and it was great. And so let's convene, and we'll bring some other people. Maybe would you like to join roundtables? Are you interested in doing roundtables?
Absolutely, absolutely.
So we've got some interesting people we can talk to.
That would be fun.
This week I've got another Alex Collier webinar, that's, on Friday. That's the 2nd of September, the first one. I might even be taking a little bit of a break. So right in the middle of September or towards the third week of September, I'll be taking a break. I hope. And, whoever knows, I might knock on your door. I say, hey, it's JP. You said I could come and stay. Where's your sofa? Give me your sofa. I want tea. Thank you very much, Joanna. Good night, everybody.
Thanks,
this has been
JP.
Journeys with JP on Revolution Radio Studio B, Wolf Spirit Radio, Ever Beyond Radio. Listen to me. Ever Beyond Radio! Good night.